I think it's something. Obviously, you know, the president talking yesterday about income inequality, and he put it in the State of the Union address the last time, and some states have already moved forward on minimum wage. So this is going to certainly garnish a great deal of conversation in Washington, probably between now and the midterms. It may become a big issue. But when you look at the numbers, there just are absolutes. We don't really have a habit of raising the minimum wage in this country. The last time we did, it was like 11 years previous to that. When you look at the income that has been picked up by American workers, it's just not in their favor as opposed to what the top 2% has gotten. And the numbers are the numbers. Since 2000 to 2010, 95% of new income in this country went to the top 2%. And this is what the president wants to address. Income inequality is going to be a big issue, and it all starts with the minimum wage, in his opinion.
Well, if you look at what the minimum wage is worth today, back to what it was worth in the 70s, you can trim out of that 725 another 350 off it. I mean, really, it there is no minimum wage now, Ed. I mean, really, isn't that the story?
Well, you know, the minimum wage is not meant to be a career, but survival is important. And when you have people on minimum wage who are on food stamps, and that, of course, is a big target now in these budget negotiations, something has to give. When you have corporations making record profits, when you have making the money isn't the issue for the corporations. It's what they want to pay out. And you can talk about it being market-driven, but, you know, the American people get it. The American people, in my opinion, Joel, are not in the library. They're out in the streets. They're out in the streets because people like Walmart made $19 billion last year, and their employees are on food stamps. I mean, they're holding food drives for some of the employees in the state of Ohio who work at Walmart. Now, I'm not picking on Walmart. This is what's happening. And so either we're going to address it as a country or we're not, and it's going to take the next vote to do it, I think.
So in today's political climate, you deal with this way more than I do on a national level. How in the world can you even get this through? I mean, does it take a strike like this to make the point? I mean, does it even have a chance of passing?
Well, this is a new equation. There's no question about that. This is a new element to the story, and it's going to be interesting to see if these workers hang on. You know, go back to the Wall Street people. What were they called again? I forget, the one percenters or whatever, the 99% crowd that was out there striking on Wall Street a couple of years ago. They changed the subject in the country. There's no question about it. And it'll be interesting to see if the intensity continues to rise with these workers and these strikes continue, because they don't think anything's going to get done. I don't think anything's going to get done. You've got a Congress that's only scheduled to work 114 days next year. The House has had 239 days off this year. They're going to be the most non-productive House in modern history. So, no, in answer to your question, no, I don't think it's going to get passed. And so I think this is going to be a big issue running into the midterm.
Who's the winners and losers here? Is this one of those both sides win? Because the Republicans love sticking up for the one percenters, so the one percenters don't want to pay anything more than 725, so what the heck? Their base is happy. The Democrats say, hey, we stuck up for you. It wasn't our fault. We didn't get anything done. So their base is happy, yet really not happy. I mean, who's the winners and losers if nothing gets done here?
Well, I don't think there's any downside for the Democrats sticking up for workers. I mean, I think we've seen the last two election cycles outside of the 2010 Tea Party movement. And that movement took place not because of healthcare, but because of an economy that was in the early stages of a recovery. But I think you've seen the last few election cycles where you stick with workers, you win. And so I don't see any downside at all. The Democrats aren't going to stop talking about income inequality. This is a subject that Boehner, they don't want to talk about. They don't even think it exists. They call it the free market. And on the other hand, Joel, you know, this, and I've talked to you about this before, the Trans-Pacific Trade Agreement, you know, the Democrats have dirty hands on this too. This is not good for American workers, this trade agreement that they're talking about, trying to get on the fast track that's going to involve a bunch of Indonesian countries. So there's, I mean, there's some real fundamental questions that have to be dealt with when it comes to our economy. The Republicans probably have the downside, to answer your question, more so than the Democrats, because the populist movement in the country is wages and the economy.
Well, when you look at all of this, how effective is a strike like this? I mean, it obviously has us talking about it. You play out in national media, they'll play it up big time today. Will it have an effect on the debate?
Well, I think you've had my friend John Nichols has already tweeted out this morning some of these stores have closed for the day. Now, that's not good. If you're an owner, you can't make money unless you're open. So I think that there's an admission here that these strikers are causing a problem. If they get exposure, if it gets talked about, I think it's going to motivate them to keep focused and keep going. And then you've got the union involvement, which you're going to see, I think, probably the communication workers, probably the steel workers, probably the Teamsters, you'll see Service Employees International Union. You'll see some, especially them, the SEIU. They're going to get behind these folks, and they're going to be right in there and fighting for them. I've got James Hoffa on the program tonight on TV talking about this. But this could be the beginning of a revival of the 99% movement, the Wall Street movement that took place in New York a few years ago and then spread around the country. This could be that in a different form as the way it unfolds.
Ed, somebody called into my show. Ed Schultz is our guest here on News and Views today. Ed, someone called into my show and said, Joel, the only topic for discussion in the next election is going to be Obamacare. Plain and simple. The Affordable Care Act will be the only subject that comes up in the next election. Your thoughts on that?
It's a big one. There's no question about it. And, you know, I'm anxious to know how North Dakotans feel about this. You've got an aging population. You do have a growing state. For most Americans, it's going to be better. All the arguments that have been thrown up against someone getting health care that couldn't get it before, I think, have been debunked. In fact, I think the offensive that the White House is going on right now is setting the stage and putting out a blueprint for Democrats to go home and walk with pride about people are not going to be discriminated against. You know, Joel, you and I, and we're human, we could not pick our parents. We couldn't pick the color of our skin. We couldn't pick the environment that we were born into. And so we can't pick whether we get cancer or not. We can't pick whether we get ALS. We can't pick whether, you know, we get tuberculosis. And so why would we discriminate against somebody who's getting sick? Why would we discriminate and say, no, you can't have insurance and you don't qualify because you're sick? There's no difference. This is a civil rights issue. There's no difference between telling a black person that they can't sit at the cafe counter or they can't sit on a bus in the front or the back than there is telling someone who has got an illness that they can't have insurance. This is the reform that's taken place. Are there people that are going to be paying more for insurance? Yes. Are there going to be people that are going to be getting a break? Yes. This is reform. It's going to be costly for some, but for the majority of Americans, we're going to have more people covered, we're going to have better outcomes, and we're going to bring our costs down, and we're already seeing that. And I think that, you know, the Republicans are on the wrong side of history with this, and it's just going to take time to play out.
Ed, what do you say to the Americans who feel that they were lied to by the president when he said, if you like your current plan, you can keep your current plan?
An extremely inartful way to explain what was happening. The president took for granted that what he had on the table was going to be better. He will not use the term junk insurance. The insurance industry was selling policies to people with no standards. And so he was saying that, well, if you like your insurance, you can keep it. Well, it was an inartful way to put it. it's been twisted into a lie. I know this president. I met with him last week in Washington. He is not a liar, okay? And I can tell you right now that certainly they'd like to have that, quote, sentence back. But the fact is that we now have standards, Joel. The insurance industry must cover people. The insurance industry cannot drop people when they get sick. And there's 10 standards in this bill that have to be met. The insurance industry was out on the market selling stuff that had none of these standards, none of these reforms. And so the president thinks, well, you know, over time, people are going to realize how good this is, and they're actually going to be purchasing something that's going to give them coverage. And it's just going to take time for people to recognize how good it is, and the administration and advocacy groups across the country are going to be out telling stories about, you know, how they're covered now. This is life-changing stuff for a lot of people. You won't go bankrupt in America anymore because you're going to have insurance. Isn't that a good thing? I believe it is.
Should Kathleen Sebelius have been fired for the rollout of Obamacare?
Well, look, it's easy to get somebody's scalp when things don't go right. The fact is the government has got some archaic procurement rules when it comes to bidding and contracting that is pre-internet. And I think that you could look at waste, fraud, and abuse in Iraq, and you can almost equate it to what the heck's going on with the Obamacare rollout because of the way the contracting is done. I think there was a lot of subcontracting that was done that, caused the problem. But here's the bottom line. There's 800,000 people that can go on there now, and they ran through 1 million people the other day with no problem. The rollout's history. The rollout's over. Where are we today? We're in the now business. The now business is that they can handle over 50,000 people per minute. And so this is progress. It's moving forward. It was a rocky start. The rollout of Medicare Part D under Bush was not very good, but it didn't get the attention. And so I think it's progress. We're moving forward. We got to know where we're going to be 3 months from now, 5 months. Where are we going to be in the midterm? I'll tell you what. Every Democrat's going to be able to go home and say, I made sure you had insurance and you weren't discriminated against. That's the side I'm on. The House voted 45 times to take it away. Who do you want to trust? That's where it is.
Stick around for a little bit longer. I want to get your thoughts on the passing of a man you worked with for quite a while, Larry Risfit. To tie back in with Ed Schultz, not exactly a stranger to all of you here on News and Views. Ed, the passing of Larry Risfit. All the years you worked with Larry, what did Larry Risfit mean to you?
Well, I thought Larry was just a real quality guy. He was a fabulous broadcaster, jovial, amiable, always well-versed, had a very unique take on things. And just a quality guy to be around. He was a real fixture at KFGO and a real part of the foundation of what is a rich tradition in broadcasting in this country. I mean, there's not a whole lot of KFGOs, Joel. I mean, there's WBZ in Boston. There's maybe a big station, LS, in Chicago. There's KGO in San Francisco. And there's KFGO in Fargo. I mean, there's very few big AM stations that do it the way KFGO does it. Larry was a huge part of that, and he was on the ground floor. And, we always have a tendency as humans to say great things about people after they're gone. But in this case, you can't overstate the fact that he was just a quality person. And, professionally, I worked with Larry every day. Personally, we weren't all that close. We had a great respect for one another. Went to dinner a few times. But I honestly thought I had some of my best interactions with Larry. I mean, he had an innate ability to bring the good out in people on the air.
Yeah, he did. Yeah,
I mean, that guy, he could take a morsel of information and turn it into a segment.
Well said. Thank you for your time today on News and Views. Appreciate it, Ed.
You bet, Joel. All the best to you. Thanks.